Welcome back to the Pharmacy in Practice podcast after a bit of a sabbatical. I think it's been about a year. I was checking last night. It's been about a year since we've done it. I suppose we should date this first one. It's December 2022 already. Christmas is just around the corner. This is just an intro one, back to say hello. Get back on the horse, I guess. Lots to talk about. And I suppose this initial podcast is just to say hello, but also to introduce hopefully a long-standing future panelist, amongst others, Mr. Trevor Gore. Trevor, you have your reputation in pharmacy precedes you, but I'll let you fluff it up a bit and introduce yourself.
I don't know if something preceding me is a good idea or not. Started in community pharmacy and was quite surprised how quickly I became A, disenchanted, but B, reps would come in with their shiny cars and their shiny suits and tell me they didn't get out of bed till 9 o'clock and they finished at 3 in the afternoon and didn't work Fridays. And I thought, I'm working 60 hours a week. This is ridiculous. So I went away and became a rep. And I learned something really important as a rep. I was a rarer type of rep in those days that I called on GPs in the morning and pharmacies in the afternoon, which was the model at the time. And I got my wonderful detail laid out that the company had produced and talked to a doctor about our product and said, there you go. And he'd nodded all the way through and said, yep, it's a great product. So I said, are you going to prescribe it? And he went, no. And I thought, well, why are people stupid? So I went away and blessed the Open University, got a degree in behavioral psychology because I want to know why they do things they do. And I came across this great quote that says, the trouble with market research is that people don't think how they feel, they don't say what they think, and they don't do what they say. And I thought, that's not just market research, that's people. I suspect every pharmacy listening to this has asked people if they wanted a certain service, launched it, and it's died in its ass because that's how people are. I then joined Reckitt's, and probably where I'm best known for, ran their education program for community pharmacy and assistants for 16 years. Then I joined the global Reckitt's business and became their global healthcare training manager, whizzing around the world, excuse me, trying to get markets to replicate what I'd done in the UK, making it the centre of excellence. And for quite a long time, when I was doing Reckitt's UK, I moved it away from here's Gaviscon, isn't it wonderful, to selling skills, communication skills, because way back pharmacists didn't have communication skills training. And I think I saw most pre-regs in the market and did communication skills, non-product, just to show how much we believed in the pharmacy sector. And there were different ways of doing things. And as you say, we find that I semi-retired 6 years ago now. And I've been doing my own consultancy bit, talking at international and national conferences, and continuing to support pharmacy. And my interests have moved a little. So I'm still madly passionate about community pharmacy, but I'm a trustee for the Self Care Forum charity because I think self care is really important. And I think pharmacy can and should be at the center of that. But I'm also an associate director of the Institute for Collaborative Working. Because it came to me again a long time ago that none of the problems with people's health or with community pharmacy can be solved on its own. It has to be a collaborative model. And unfortunately, we don't really see that even now. So, as you say, middle of December 2022, I can't turn on the TV or open my newspaper without pharmacy being in the news, which I think is a two-edged sword. There's lots of good things happening, but the news is bad.
I think so. I think there's other reasons why we would like to be hailed as the saviors of the NHS and so on and so forth, but that's not happening at the moment. Lot like hundreds of topics to talk about. That I suppose I should like stay focused for a minute or two before we have a blather around sort of what our plan is and what we're thinking. I'm looking forward to having you involved in this series of podcasts in the new year because whether we like it or not, commercialism and your interests around behavioral science and psychology, and to be honest, selling is, in my opinion, is going to become, whether we like it or not, incredibly important for community pharmacy in the next decade, I think. The how we do business stuff is vanishing in front of us. There is some momentum, and that momentum, I think everyone would agree, varies by country and by devolved administration's appetite to fund said momentum. But I think the macroeconomic situation is pretty grim. But that's why I'm looking forward to speaking to you, Trevor. Your experience in industry basically will be very, very interesting when that's superimposed on pharmacy and community pharmacy, I think. And I think that I was going to say the plan for what we intend to do is I think you said it on a call before we started. So if it's a question of sport, I'm Sue, and you're Matt Dawson. There might be a few more Phil Tufnells as we go, but basically what we're going to do is you and I'll come on, I don't know, by fortnightly, monthly, let's not be too strict about it, but it will be regularly. And we'll have a chat about the news. I'll interview someone, and then we'll have a chat about the interview afterwards. And we'll go from there, and we'll just see where it takes us.
I think that's really interesting. I think the commercialism, there's always been this dichotomy, this tension between the healthcare professional and the businessman. And I think, to be fair, my sort of side of industry, there's a psychological technique called framing, which is you can position the same thing in two different ways to make it appealing. And we always called it link selling. And immediately it put up pharmacists and assistants back is, I'm not here to sell, I'm here to look after my patients. If you reframe that as adding value, you know, you've got, I'm a type 2 diabetic. You have a diabetic patient come in and you just ask about their skin. I use McDonald's a lot as an analogy, because, not because I like it, I have visited it on more than one occasion, but they understand their role. And, you know, I've worked with loads of pharmacies, and when you call it link selling, they, oh, we don't want to do that, or even added value, or they don't want to buy that. You're not forcing anybody to buy anything. When you go to McDonald's and say, I want a burger, and they say, do you want to make it big? Do you want a meal? Do you want a Coke with that? Do you want to large size it? If you say no, they go, okay. They don't leap over the counter and headbutt you. And I think pharmacies are a little scared that if they try and add value, that the customers will walk away. They absolutely won't. You know, they'll never care how much you know till they know how much you care.
Yeah, and I mean, this is, I've been qualified now for 15 years, and honestly, this is the conversation we've been having since I qualified, and really, the start of it was 1990 with Hepler and Strand and pharmaceutical care, and here we are over 30 years later, you know. Here's a question for you, right? I decided 5 years ago, because when you qualify as a pharmacist, well, my generation, I think there is a bit at the back of your mind thinking if you have an interest in business and you'd like to sort of invest in your local community, you think, right, I probably will own a pharmacy someday. I'll maybe look to give it a go. But Holly and I decided not to about 4 years ago, finally, and decided to go continue with pharmacy in practice. Now I do the odd locum. And I do have other interests, you know, it's not like I'm doing nothing, but here's a question, Trevor. Do you think that was a good decision?
Considering where we are now, yes. Mm-hmm. The playing field, the numbers are interesting. So the numbers of independent pharmacies hasn't collapsed. It's been decreasing, but it's not collapsed. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's a level playing field anymore. It never really was. But I think it's got worse because you see the larger integrated pharmacies, vertically integrated pharmacies, shall we say, buying shops, which you know cannot be profitable. And the government report that said, you know, there are too many pharmacies. I don't think there are. I think there are too many in some places. I mean, if you can walk next door to another one and they can afford to buy them, run them at a loss till everybody else has gone out of business and then start closing down and have a monopoly. That concerns me. the other reason I think you were right not to is just what's happened. The and I'm sure in many of our conversations we get onto this, but the contractual framework that, as I said, pharmacists in the news every day, a framework that allows pharmacists to dispense at a loss isn't a great framework.
No. Somebody's made a mistake on that contract, haven't they?
Hugely.
Somebody hasn't seen that coming down the track.
And I was at a conference a month or so ago where the Janet from the PSNC said they've up till now they've been talking to the wrong people. That's terrifying. That the negotiating body hasn't been talking to the right people. Now, she's new in the role, so it's absolutely, I'm not putting any blame on her. But the problem with, for me, one of the challenges with pharmacies, they don't speak with one voice. You know, again, we've got the news today of the nurses on strike, but you talk to the Royal College of Nursing. Who do I speak to in pharmacy? RPS, yeah, CCA, no. We like our initials, RPS, CCA, AIM, MPA. Who do I speak to? Because they're all got their own members' interests, vested interests at stake, and pretend to talk for all of pharmacy and don't.
I think it's like, I used to do a lot of sailing when I was younger, like competitive sailing. And I don't know if you've done it or ever seen a sailing race, but basically...
I've been on a boat.
Right, cool, right. Okay, so basically before the start, there's a countdown from 10 minutes, right? And before the start, all the little dinghies sort of hover around the line and, you know, you can't stay still in a boat. So there's a lot of like jostling and, you know, and then 2 minutes, 1 minute 30, 1 minute and so on and so on. And then boom, off we go. And they all suddenly line up and off they go. Pharmacy representation just reminds me of that bit before the start where we're all like, you know, like just jostling. We never actually get going, you know. And some people, you know, before the start of us, it's quite a good analogy, actually. Before the start of a sailing race, you can actually go backwards quite happily because we haven't started yet, you know. So you'll look around and someone's sailing off that way. And it doesn't matter. And that's the problem. Like, that really is the problem. And the other problem with all representation bodies, they're full of great folk. They're full of absolutely smashing people. And many have tried over the years to pull it together. I think you mentioned it earlier before we were chatting. Although I'd never met Rob Darricott, you know, he and others were involved in the Pharmacy Voice thing. I mean, it's not just that. He probably had the best stab at it from what I could see, but others have tried. And now we've got the Leadership Commission, which I don't know whether I'm reading between the lines wrong, but that, I mean, the chief pharmaceutical officers represent the government, so they're basically an employer. And they have both dual governance and leadership functions. So is this a step back? I suppose this is I'm just asking, I'm pondering it really. Like, is this a step back to a combined regulatory type leadership role?
It's what I call a virtuous circle. Because we keep going around it. We're having the same discussions today that we were having with this contractual framework that we had with the previous contractual framework. Do more services but get less money. Not a sustainable model. But you mentioned the L word, which is really interesting, because throughout my professional career, I have been managed. I have managed. And it's the difference between leaders and managers. Leaders focus on planning, organization, and coordinating activities. And that's what our leadership bodies have been doing, where they should be inspiring and motivating. Where's the inspiration coming from at the moment in the world of community pharmacy?
I would say, to answer that question, I would say a small number of early adopters who are pushing treacle up a hill, trying to do the right thing to also make money. I mean, there are people out there that are trying. They're usually like, there are some contractors who just go after everything. Like Meyer and Deers Pharmacy, for example, in Edinburgh. Barney and Cadham, Jonathan Rees and Wheels, you know, the list goes on. There are people out there, but it's really hard, you know, for these people. And in Scotland, I have to acknowledge there is a cohort now of independent prescribing community pharmacy employees. who are doing stuff and it's progressing and so on. It's like there is green shoots, but that it's tiny.
It's tiny
to, compared to the.
And I think the problem is, you're absolutely right, throughout the UK, there are individual pharmacists doing great stuff, showing leadership. But you can't have spots of leadership. The leadership role means you're inspiring, you're motivating an organization. If you're mm-hmm. doing it piecemeal, little silo at a time, it will take forever. I mean, in the news recently, you've got Twitter. No, I don't tweet. I have a Twitter account, but I don't tweet. Now, whether you like Musk's leadership or not, he's showing leadership. He's saying, this is what we're going to do. He's ended up demotivating people and having to leave by using a really heavy-handed managerial approach. Mm-hmm. But everybody knows the direction. Everybody who works for that organization knows the direction of travel of what you've got to do. Everybody who works with your local independent pharmacy who's doing these great things knows what they want to do. My challenge to the industry, to the community, is where's the big top vision for what pharmacy should be? Because every time a minister or anybody says, oh, pharmacists can do this, pharmacists can hand out antibiotics, pharmacists should be doing A, B, and C. Half the pharmacy world says, not without being paid, I'm not going to do it. A quarter says, we don't want to do this. This isn't our job. We're too busy doing bloody prescriptions. The second you've got that, you haven't got a leadership position or motivation. You've got an idea.
Yeah. And there's loads within it. And I don't want to not give credit where it's due. Like, you know, like for a contractor body, the recent, I don't know if it's recent now, maybe a year or two ago, Community Pharmacy Scotland's vision, considering they're a negotiating body, it could have been written by a leadership body. Their vision for what they want in the network is laudable, but I think it is problematic that, or I don't know, I imagine it would be problematic when they have to bring, they and others, not just them, and the whole community pharmacy network, and you mentioned the multiples, if you're stuck in a negotiating position where you have to bring everyone with you, including the laggards, then that's going to be a difficult sell, I think, in the long run, especially when you've got, we have to acknowledge stuff like, you know, like closures. And there have been an awful lot of unscheduled closures across the UK. You know, macroeconomic situations like locum rates are going up. Tongue in cheek, I am a locum occasionally. So, you know, all these things are into the melting pot. And then the other thing that I wanted to speak to you about this morning, Trevor, was the price of drugs as well. In this maelstrom, and this, you touched on it, the contractual framework in England. I mean, you know, even in Scotland, where there's a really like good contract, as far as I could see, and progressive contract, how on earth can you buy a box of omeprazole at £9.20 and then, you know, get remunerated 3 months later at 70 pence? Yeah. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. Where does that stop?
You know, I just don't get it.
It touches on, as I said, the contractual framework isn't fit for purpose. But we've had in just this last week, penicillin's gone up. There's been the great and the good. Rena was on the news the other day, and Janet's been on from PSNC saying, you know, it's ridiculous that antibiotics used to cost £2 of now £11. Absolutely. My challenge to more to Janet than Rena, to be honest, my challenge is... When some pharmacists talk to the public, we assume a level of understanding and knowledge. I understood exactly what they meant, but all the public will have heard is pharmacy and price gouging.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the wrong message. It's not the pharmacy. We know it's not pharmacists that are price gouging, but that's not what the public will hear. They'll hear, the supply chain doesn't interest anybody outside of us. Mm-hmm. People want to walk into their local pharmacy and get a pack of something. And if you tell them you can't get it, it's the wholesaler's fault. Well, you should have ordered more earlier. At the beginning, I was amused. I took a picture of it. I was amused at the beginning of COVID and the lockdowns. I went into Sainsbury's and they were full of empty shelves. And it said, the shelves are empty due to excessive demand. And I thought, well, you don't understand your own business. It wasn't due to excessive demand. It was due to a failure of supply. And those are very different things. They didn't do that. But you mentioned vision. I've used for a long, long time, I don't know if you've ever seen it, called the equation for change, because that's actually what we're talking about, a change management program. Things have to change. And it starts off with a vision, but then you need the skills, you need the incentive, you need the resources, and you need an action plan to make all this happen. And if you don't have any one of those things, it falls apart in quite predictable ways. So if you don't have a vision, there's confusion. Welcome to today. If you don't have the skills, there's anxiety. We're not going to do it. If you don't have the incentive, it doesn't really change very much. If you don't have the resources, everybody's frustrated because we can't do it. And if you don't have an action plan, again, where we sort of are, it's stop, start, stop, start, backwards, forwards, backwards, forwards. And I think a great thing to do over the coming weeks, months and years, as we age gracelessly, would be whatever conversations we have to people is look through the lens of change and see what's missing. Okay, you've got a vision, or what is missing from this that's going to make it happen? Or are you only focusing on one of it? And that's fine. Excuse me. If your bit of the pharmacy world is to create the vision, you don't need the rest, but you need to understand how everything else is going to drop into it.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting way of looking at it. And again, to give credit where it's due, I think, slightly biased to Scotland as usual, I think the network in Scotland is farther down that route, but it's not without, as you say, predictable and for those in the know, fairly obvious challenges. I don't know where the tipping point is. The tipping point seems to be closer in England. There doesn't seem to be as much scope financially to pivot down there. That's my impression. But
yeah, I live in England. We're a mess. The ministers have said they're interested in a pharmacy first scheme for England, but Scotland, not without its challenges, but because all prescriptions are free, that's one incentive. In the UK, people are paying for prescriptions but can access a pharmacy. But how will that work? So there are action plans in there that I don't think have been fully thought through. Loads of pharmacists have already said, we haven't got the time or the inclination to do this. We spend all our hours doing prescriptions. And let's be brutally honest, 90-odd% of most pharmacists' incomes comes from NHS prescriptions. So you'd be a fool not to focus on that part of your business. But that's been going down over the years. So they have to focus on replacing that. And, you know, this won't be a popular view, but not recently, but in the past, they didn't have it too bad. There's an element of, you know, you mentioned pricing earlier. There was a time, not too long ago, where parallel imports made it quite attractive to be in pharmacy. And I don't remember many pharmacies saying, we should be giving this money back. This isn't fair. It's not a popular view.
And there is a very, very solid example of something that the general public doesn't care about, and that, as you say, why were we not complaining that we were making too much profit when we were importing our NovoRapid from abroad pre-Brexit, and dare I say it, maybe wholesaling it on some occasions?
Yeah.
I know these are the things that have to be spoken about. These are the things that when you go, like, you go out for a pint with your pharmacist or pharmacy pals, and this is the stuff that comes up. I mean, but we're stuck in this, like, I don't know whether we've reached peak social media yet or not. Or
sadly not. I think it's going to go on for a bit.
It is, isn't it? It's bizarre. To your point, you go back to what we were speaking about earlier, a little bit about early adopters and the network and stuff like that. It's like giving your favorite child more rewards. You know, there's sort of no point to it because the child's already successful. It's what can they do for the rest of the network, and or in the child's case, the rest of the family. And I think this, it probably happens in other professions and walks of life as well more recently. And I think it is driven by sort of virtue signaling, social media, dopamine hit type behaviors, is that it's the award. I mean, the peak of it is the awards thing, really, isn't it? I don't have anything against awards per se. It's just in pharmacy circles tends to be the same people, but that's
absolutely.
It's almost not the point I'm making. It's just this environment encourages a fixation on those early adopter people, but it's the middle of the normal distribution curve that is absolutely critical at the moment. And it's, as you said about supply, and we've talked about omeprazole, and it's probably quite a good introduction to where we're going with all this, you know, the macroeconomic stuff, all that locum stuff, all that stuff from a pharmacy owner's point of view. How do we get the normal distribution to move on a little bit? I'm not sure.
When I was alive, which is how I refer to my time in the corporate world, when I was alive, I always used to say about the distribution curve, ignore the early adopters and the laggards. The early adopters were ahead of you, and the laggards are never going to change. So you're absolutely right. You focus on the middle group. And again, with behaviorism, you use some motivational theories. There's intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. We just tend to use carrots and sticks, which the carrot works as long as you're giving somebody a carrot. So you have to keep motivating them. The stick works as long as you're being beaten. You remove either of them and progress stops. The phrase I used to use is build a fire inside people, not under them. And you use the early adopters to show others what are possible, because it's fear that stops most people changing what they do. I don't think I can do that. I don't think it'll work. I don't think it'll be viable. You use the early adopters to show them how it works. So I agree with you. I see the same faces winning most awards. I don't think we use them well enough. We get a half-page article in the local whatever magazine sponsored the award saying, look at a great job they're doing, and then it dies. We should be using them at a national level to say, this is what's possible. I did it. And the thing that's quite inspiring for me is I look at the ages of some of these. It's the young guys and girls. It's the younger people who are doing these things that pharmacy.
Yeah. But there is a but there. The young guys, there's always a but. The young guys go into it. Oh, well, one thing I was going to say was, a tremendous carrot would be getting the contract, more in England, better formed, signed, sealed, and delivered. You know, because nothing more motivating than at least making the whole escapade financially viable. I mean, we've got to keep coming back to that, because it is a bit ludicrous. I would say, I'm not so sure about Wales or Northern Ireland where they're up to, but Scotland, really, the bones of the contract is a lot more solid, and the network is a lot more together, and there is a bit of a moving forward together thing. Although, to your point about the change management thing, there are fairly obvious challenges, which no reason why there shouldn't be, and no reason why they can't be overcome. It is these early adopter people, a lot of them are the youngsters, fair enough. And you go to the pharmacy show and CPC, and you see them, and we were there this year, pharmacy show. It was great to get out and see everyone. And we watched a few talks, and they were pretty, pretty, pretty good. What typically happens is they burn out, though, because there's tremendous pressure to deliver this 90% of the business income of in terms of supply. And then they're over here trying to do all the fancy stuff. And eventually, whoever's taking the money or wants to receive the money in the business, perfectly logically, perhaps gets frustrated with, why are they spending so much time over here when all the money's coming in over here? And that's there lies the problem. But I agree, we haven't made the most of them. I'm not against awards per se. It's just an observation, really, Trevor.
No, I think some of it is future-proofing. So what quite a lot of these young entrepreneurs are doing is future-proofing their business so they're not as reliant on 90%. I think that's the fundamental challenge for pharmacy. If the government is 90% of your business, it's not a fair negotiation. But I think we've given them enough to wet their whistle before Christmas.
Absolutely.
And see the type of football focus we're going to be.
Absolutely. And we have a few guests lined up already, so I'll maybe just keep them up our sleeve for the meantime, but they're well-known faces. Some at the coal face, some not, some young, some old, you know. Oh, sorry, no one's old.
Somebody said to me,
Great.
I'm 62, I don't mind admitting it. And somebody was saying to me, oh, now you're middle-aged. I said, only if I live to be 124 am I middle-aged.
Exactly.
That is,
No.
anybody who knows me and knows my habits know that's not happening.
Brilliant. No, and the spirit of the whole thing is broadly positive, but I suppose we have to, like we did here, like we have to acknowledge the reality of the situation, good and bad, because
Absolutely.
things may improve, who knows? But we will go forth with that in mind, and I will touch base with you after Christmas, and let's catch up on the news then and discuss our first guest.
Excellent. Good to see you, Jonathan. Have a good Christmas.
Have a nice Christmas. See you soon.
Bye.
So that's the end of another Pharmacy in Practice podcast. If you'd like to follow us, like, comment, review, whatever the kids do these days, you can do. So we're on Twitter. The Pharmacy in Practice Twitter handle is @PharmInPractice. We're on Facebook. We're on LinkedIn. Apparently, if you leave a review on the podcast, it really helps get us up the rankings. So if you feel like doing that, please do. And our new podcast series, really, we'd love to hear from readers. So if you have any thoughts or comments, pop it on Twitter, or you can also email me directly at Jonathan, JohnathanPipp.Scott, and we'll read out the emails on the future podcasts. If you want to subscribe, you can also go to www.pip.Scott. And on the homepage, there's a number of buttons there that you can subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast player. And in the meantime, thanks very much for listening.